than I.
Calling the meeting to order, Ms. Ling, would you lead us in the pledge? Would everybody stand? Ms. Ling, would you conduct a roll call? Well, okay. Would you conduct a roll call, please?
Yes, Chair. Commissioner Hu?
Present.
Commissioner Williams is absent. Commissioner Rapolgal-Purinton?
Here.
Commissioner Furia?
Present.
Vice Chair Walton?
Present.
Chair Jenkins?
Present.
Apologies. Commissioner Philobosian.
I'm here as well.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Okay, public forum. This is a time for the public to speak out on any issue that isn't on our agenda. Ms. Ling, is there any members of the public that wish to speak to items that are not on our agenda?
Chair Jenkins, I see no public comment.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, are there any...
Excuse me, Chair Jenkins. We did receive a written public comment to be posted for the public comment period. The commissioners have that public comment. It's also posted on our website and available here in City Hall for the public to review. It is not affiliated with any item on the agenda, so we cannot comment on it, but it is available for the members of the public to review.
Thank you. Okay, moving right along. Item A, the consent calendar. Ms. Ling, would you read the items that are recorded on the consent calendar?
Yes. A, consent calendar. A1, approval of the March 8th, 2023 Parks and Recreation Commission meeting minutes. A2, Parks and Recreation Manager Project and Program Updates. A3, Parks and Open Space Division Report. A4, Director's Report.
Thank you. Are there any commissioners that would like to pull any items that are on the agenda? Seeing none, I'd like to call for a roll vote to approve of the agenda as presented.
Chair Jenkins, you'll need a motion and a second before we can do the vote.
Will someone make a motion to approve of the consent calendar?
I move we approve the consent calendar.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's no discussion because we all approved of it. Let's do a roll call vote.
Yes, and also if we'll do the roll call vote, and if the commissioners can also lock in their votes, we're going to attempt technology this evening as well.
Okay.
Commissioner Hu?
Yes.
Commissioner Rapolgal-Purinton?
Yes.
Commissioner Philobosian?
Yes.
Commissioner Furia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Walton?
Yes.
Chair Jenkins?
Yes.
Please lock in your votes. It's going to be in the lower right-hand corner of your tab. tablet?
It isn't appearing on my tablet. Well, we all said yes.
Yeah, we said yes.
So we're good to go. Okay. Moving on to the next item on our agenda is item B. We'd like to get a report from Mr. Thompson. Mr. Thompson is a park and is a supervisor
open space
for parks and open spaces, and he's going to give a report on the storm damage to parks and open spaces.
Great. Thank you, Chair and Commissioners. I manage our Parks and Open Space Division, and this evening's presentation is going to be a roundup of a lot of storm damage that we experienced this past winter. There are two sides to this winter. One, we had near record rainfall, got us out of the drought. Tremendous things came out of that. We see Lake Los Carneros is finally full. 2011 was the last time that was full. It's absolutely beautiful out there. Lots of wildflowers, potentially lots of food resources available for our wildlife. And the landscape just looks beautiful. During the storm events, however, it was a different story. And so we had two storm events in particular that we'll be highlighting tonight. Basically an overview of a lot of the damage that we've seen. So I'll be going through slides of what that looks like out in the field. Before we jump in, I just want to acknowledge our parks and maintenance staff, as well as a whole team of contractors, consultants, and our wider public works department staff. During these storm events, we were working 24-hour shifts. So we had staff patrolling our city streets, looking for issues to address, whether it's localized flooding, immediately deploying pumps, closing down roadways, closing down park facilities, responding to calls for assistance. And so as you look at all of the damage that has accrued, just know that we had staff out in the field addressing it at the time of the event. And the point that I hope to drive home tonight is that we have a huge additional workload that will be months, if not years, to address. And I'll explain why in some cases it may take years. Not sure where I should point this thing to make it work, but... Great. I'll just do a next slide, please. Okay. All right. Most of you at this point are familiar with the phrase atmospheric river and are probably sick of that phrase by now, but it's a relatively new part of our commonplace weather forecasting lingo now. Essentially what that means is when we have these large winter storms that come primarily from due west and trap a lot of moisture from the tropics and deliver it smack dab into California, we tend to see a couple different things happen there. Increased rainfall rates and in some cases additional wind. And so we had several atmospheric events this past winter, most notably January 9th and March 9th. And so these are two screen grabs of the actual forecast models from each of those events. They translated into above average rainfall, and I believe in at least one of the cases, record rainfall for a single day. It also resulted in, next slide please, the federal government declaring two disasters. And when the federal agency FEMA, basically our president declares a federal disaster, that opens up several things in terms of federal assistance to local agencies like the city of Goleta. And so now we are engaging with federal officials from the Federal Emergency Management Agency and also the California equivalent, Cal OES, Office of Emergency Services. And so the response now is we have the immediate response to storm damage, and then there's a lengthy process where we potentially are eligible for reimbursement of funds. So all of these responses take money, staff time, et cetera. So we have a whole team of staff and consultants now engaging with both the federal and state governments to make sure that Goleta can get as much money back from both of those agencies to make sure that the millions of dollars potentially that we're shelling out for the response, that hopefully we can get reimbursement for that so it doesn't impact our ongoing projects and staffing and budget. Okay, next slide, please. I'll start with tree damage because we have significant tree damage throughout our parks and open spaces. So we've gone, done an inventory of all of our parks and open spaces. We were up to about 200 individual trees that were impacted. And that can be on the order of, you know, a large limb was broken during the storm event and fell and broke a sidewalk, to a large limb fell and got hung up in the canopy and needs to be extracted, all the way to a full failure of a tree. And so you'll see what full failure means, but I'm sure you already can appreciate that context. Particularly in Elwood, at the Butterfly Grove, where we already had impacts of drought, resulting in die-off of thousands of large eucalyptus. We also have large eucalyptus stands in Evergreen Park, large trees including eucalyptus in Stowe Grove, and then Lake Los Carneros, particularly around the caretaker's cottage near the Stowe House. So each of these red dots signifies an individual tree. We've done an inspection through our contract city arborist, and then this basically is moving into a priority setting where we've looked at all of the trees. And this next week, we'll actually be rolling out with the next round of addressing chipping, tree limb removal, and whole tree removal in some cases. Where we can save a tree, we'll do that, even if it's partially fallen over, and I'll talk about that. Next slide, please. Okay, so the next series of slides are just highlighting some of the kind of worst of the worst cases where we've got significant impacts to either park use or particularly challenging tree removal issues. So on the left here, this is above Cathedral Oaks at one of our open spaces, and then on the right, Stowe Grove. And so this is right next to one of our popular picnic areas. This is a coast live oak and a native oak tree. For this particular one, we're hoping that we can actually save this tree. Even though half the root ball's exposed, the tree is still alive. And we've got plenty of cases around town where trees have fallen over, oak trees in particular, that are next to creeks that have fallen over and still are able to hold on. In this particular case, we're going to likely do some selective pruning and then bring in topsoil, cover up that root ball, probably shift the picnic tables a little bit, but let's try to focus on preserving this tree. It's probably 200 plus years old. And is a wonderful example and could eventually come back and provide, you know, both habitat and aesthetic value and really make that picnic area a lot more inviting. So when we do go into these areas, some of these individual trees require permits to work in environmentally sensitive habitat. So we have another work effort to obtain either an emergency permit or just a regular permit, and it depends on if we're in the coastal zone or not, which agencies we need to permit with. But just know that most of these projects that I'll be showing you this evening require some level of permitting, on-site monitoring by a qualified biologist, certified arborist for the tree work, and then, of course, somebody to actually do the work. And in most cases, we're contracting that out to a licensed contractor. Next slide, please. Okay, continuing the theme, this on the left is, you can see that roadway in the background, that's Cathedral Oaks. So we have these large mature pine trees. Over the last several years, we've seen several failures at this site. This is just upstream from Stowe Canyon open space. There's a nice walking trail there. This is a huge tree. This is probably 80 feet tall, and the diameter on that trunk. It's, I believe, a double trunk tree. You can barely put your arms around it. So what do we do with all of that biomass? We try to chip up as much as we can and use it either for trail covering to reduce dust and just make it a nice walking surface. Sometimes we'll truck it to other locations like Stowe Grove, the Redwoods. We're mulching those heavily. So our intent there is to try to reuse as much of the material as possible. And then we need to make a judgment call. If you want to bring in heavy equipment and actually pull those big trunks out, you're going to create a lot of soil disturbance and damage. So in most cases, in open spaces, we can leave those trunks in place. Over time, they'll decompose and go back into the soil or provide some site amenity, like a place to sit, or we can come in later and do some habitat restoration around them. The one on the right is on Santa Barbara Shores Drive, and luckily this did not impact this homeowner, did not touch their residence, but this was Saturday morning early, got the call, and we responded and had that tree cleaned up by about noon on that Saturday. We cut it back to the property line, and then the next phase is going on to our side of the fence line, which is off the photo to the left, and addressing the rest of the fallen tree there. Where we have catastrophic failures like this, where we can't save the tree, it's completely uprooted. Our next concern, obviously, after the tree has fallen, making sure that property damage is addressed, but now we're in the drying phase. Even though we've gotten two rains in May, looks like we've got a dry forecast. So then the next potential disaster is fire, where you have large volumes of dried up biomass, and particularly at Elwood, we're particularly concerned about this. We have to act quickly to reduce that fire risk. And so that means putting as many boots on the ground to get these down trees chipped up and put the trunks and smaller limbs into ground contact. Next slide, please. This one, unfortunately, did result in some property damage. So this is at Winchester One open space. Winchester One has both a developed front part of that open space with a new exercise equipment, a small turf area, but the backside, most people don't realize, is also city property, and there's a dense eucalyptus grove there. Just to the west is a mobile home park, and so this one was another early morning event, and there was some property damage sustained. Next slide, please. This is going back to Santa Barbara Shores Drive. I included this one to show the commission. This is actually a site where we did a significant investment in tree maintenance last year. So we pruned, I believe, about 40 of these large eucalyptus to address potentially catastrophic failures or situations where there was significant lean on a tree, and if we didn't address it, it was likely to fall. So we ended up doing that work last year and just demonstrating that we can do the maintenance on trees, but you never know for certain if a tree is going to fail. You know, we employ a bunch of diagnostic tests, whether it's using a mallet to sound the trunk and see if it's solid. If it's not, that's probably indicative of some type of rot or a hollow trunk. And then just trying to get a good balance in the canopy. So we did all of that at this particular open space, but still had several catastrophic tree failures. And this one in particular that's leaning and lodged up in another tree is a good example of this. So the trail you can see goes right under that tree. And so this both of those trees had to be dropped. And they're sitting out there now waiting for the next round of chipping and processing the material. Next slide, please. And then these particularly challenging ones, this is at, I believe, La Galita Open Space in the bottom of Las Vegas Creek. And this is a large oak tree, again, that is actually down in the creek itself. And so immediately you may be thinking, okay, there's potentially a flood risk next season if we don't get this tree removed. And so this is a good example where we'll likely have to get an additional round of permits and then be really strategic on how we remove this large tree out of the creek bed without causing additional damage. Next slide. Okay, moving on to a different category, we'll be looking at several examples where we had either a drainage structure failure or one-off unusual events. This one is in the unusual category. Johnny D. Wallace Park was constructed in 2019. Ms. Plummer oversaw that construction, and this is it's a wonderful park, but we discovered this particular feature, which was not apparent during construction. What we're looking at on the left here is a sinkhole that developed during one of the winter storm events. And on the right, you can actually see in that sinkhole, there's a brick structure. We don't know for certain what it is. It's likely either abandoned septic pit, a drainage structure, or a groundwater well, one of the above. But what we saw here is significant public safety risk. We've got play features within about 10 feet of this sinkhole. And then, of course, a lot of active use at this park. So immediately mobilized, fenced this area off, brought in contractors to fill this up. And then, that's basically the fix for now. But you never know when these storm events happen what's going to be exposed. This was an unusual one. Next slide, please. Okay, moving on to sinkholes, but also drainage structures. We know this is a drainage structure. So I'll just describe what's shown here. This is over at Evergreen Park, an aerial view, obviously. On the right side of the screen, we have Padova and San Rosano, forming that 90-degree turn on the roadway there. That's one of the entrances to Evergreen Park. That blue line that you see there is where water flows from the gutter, the curb and gutter, into a storm box, basically, a curb opening where you have stormwater go in and then it goes into a storm drain. And so that storm drain goes to the left on that light blue line, curves, and then goes down a hillside and eventually meets up with an open concrete V-channel ditch that flows towards the top of the screen to Natural Creek. This particular location, we knew that there were issues previously with the storm drain system, and I'll show you what the issues are. So we actually have a capital project already in the works to replace this storm drain system. Capital projects generally take several years to get funded, do the engineering design, and then move into construction. So we're in design, the storm hit, and next slide, please. So before we go to the next slide, actually, if you could go back, the next slide I'll show will be basically ground level, what the issues were. And so just keep in mind this slide as we move from right to left down that hill slope there. Next slide. Okay, so starting on the right, this is a video camera of the storm drain as it drops in from Padova and San Rosano. So on the upper right there, you're looking in the storm drain. And if you notice, the bottom of the storm drain is missing. It's completely corroded and rusted, and it's gone. And so what happens in these cases, that's probably 60 years. This is circa 1960s infrastructure. Over the past 60 years, it's just continuously corroded and eventually leads to catastrophic failure. So that water is then going to move on the outside of the pipe and take whatever soil was previously up against that pipe and move it downstream. And so as you move to the left, you're going down the storm drain pipe, you start to see sinkholes created because all that stormwater is now moving on the outside of the pipe because there's no bottom on the pipe, and it takes all of that sediment and just moves it downstream. It's a process called piping. And so as you move down, the sinkhole gets bigger to the point where on that middle bottom photo, that is fences that we erected last year because we had already seen the development of the sinkhole further down the pipe. And then as you get to the drainage structure on the left before it runs down the hill and into the concrete drainage, there you can see catastrophic failure. That didn't happen during the storm. That's just something that we already knew was there. We need to provide significant reinvestment in infrastructure. But when we have these storm events, it gets magnified to the point where you get additional sinkholes forming. And so we mobilized and added additional fencing there. There's a temporary fix for this particular issue So we came in, recompacted the soil around the drainage pipe, sealed off the drainage inlet, which has created some additional issues with the more recent rain event in earlier this month, where we had to bring out pumps and get that water out of the roadway. But the intent here is by next rainfall in next winter, essentially, latter part of this year, it's creeping up pretty quickly, we have to have a completed project in the ground and ready to receive storm water flows. So whole new drainage system needs to go in at Evergreen Park here. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, continuing drainage infrastructure failures. This is back on San Pedro Creek upstream from Stowe Canyon Open Space. So Stowe Canyon Open Space, large turf area, tennis courts, south of Stowe Canyon. If you go on the north side of Stowe Canyon, there's a little walking trail that's part of City of Goleta's open space system, a wonderful kind of hidden neighborhood secret that I'm spilling the beans on. But if you haven't had a chance to enjoy that spot, please go. It's right along San Pedro Creek, and there is a storm drain that runs under the trail there that takes drainage from the east. There's a roadway there, neighborhood, and so that storm drain empties out into San Pedro Creek. And if you look in the shadows on the right side of the photo, there's a large storm drain down in the bottom of that pit. That pit is the creek bank, and so what happened in this case, the storm drain disconnected. So there's a concrete pipe, it transitions to a corrugated metal pipe. At that joint, it popped. And so that was buried under 10 plus feet of soil. So where it popped, stormwater is still coming in. It had to go somewhere. And so it's just eroding out that creek bank. And then on the left side, you can see the full impact of that event. This one is particularly challenging to access, hard to bring in heavy equipment. But again, we're going to have a temporary fix where we have to put riprap, basically medium-sized rocks, in the bottom of that hole, build it back up, connect the storm drain again, and just kind of band-aid it until we can get a permanent fix in there. The permanent fix would be a fully engineered design requiring permits from the city, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And so as part of that long-term repair, it'll also include a new drainage structure, repair of the creek bank, habitat restoration to put all the plants, native plants, back on that hill slope, and then rerouting of the trail around this area. So that process takes potentially years to design and construct, and then there's usually about a five-year reporting period after that. So we're looking at a seven-year project out of this one situation here. Next slide, please. Sorry, there's the bottom of that pit, so you can clearly see the size of that. I don't recall exactly how big that pipe is, but I believe it's about a 48 or 60 inch pipe. It's a big one. Next slide, please. Okay, this is back at Evergreen. I included this photo because this is not the actual pipe that failed. This is upstream. And just to highlight that we have infrastructure in all of our parks that require reinvestment, replacement, and it's costly. And so these storm events really expose our liabilities, our risks, our deferred maintenance. And so this one is on the docket to get replaced, but we know that we're going to have additional storm events before this particular pipe gets replaced. And we can look at any park in open space and identify issues that require significant investment of public funds and staff time. Next slide, please. Okay, a couple other sites. This is over at Santa Barbara Shores Open Space. On the left, again, another storm pipe that failed. You can see significant sinkhole and piping. This is about a 6 to 8 foot drop off of the public sidewalk into an open hole. And so, again, immediate response is let's fence this off, prevent members of the public from falling into this hole, and then longer term fix is ripping up that sidewalk, putting in a new pipe, restoring the surface vegetation, and pouring a new sidewalk here. A more challenging situation is on the right, where we have, this is Newport Drive, a large culvert going under Newport Drive and dumping out into the Coronado Butterfly Preserve that's owned and managed by the Land Trust of Santa Barbara County. This one has been undermined to the point where it likely is going to need a full replacement. And so this is tearing up the entire roadway, dropping in a new drainage structure. Every permit under the sun is going to be needed for this one because you're operating in essentially a tributary to Devereaux Creek, very sensitive habitat. Next slide, please. Okay, going out on Elwood Mesa, we're almost done. Two slides left here, I believe. This is our maintenance and emergency access road out to Elwood Mesa. It is the only vehicular access way to Elwood Mesa. And so we've got twice weekly trips by our parks and open space staff to service trash cans out there. We have one-off responses to deal with either emergency maintenance needs, and then of course we have emergency vehicles, fire, police, and EMS that need to get out to Elwood Beach to respond to emergencies, or as we're heading into the dry season, fires on Elwood Mesa and in the Grove. This is a critical facility. This requires immediate attention in terms of just doing a temporary fix. So we're proposing to drop in a metal plate to span this eroded area. And then as part of the Monarch Butterfly Project, which the commission has seen previously, we actually have a designed open bottom culvert that will replace the rusted metal culvert. Sorry, there are actually three slides, I believe. Next slide, please. So this is a look at the culvert itself under the road. You can see again, this was installed likely by the previous property owner, which was it used to be a private property. This was many decades ago. And so on the left there, you can see the bottom where that culvert touches water. All of that has been rusted out. There's virtually no contact with the ground. And then on the right, you can actually see separation and slumping between two sections of that corrugated metal pipe. And then directly overhead is the roadway. And that's where we've had about a 6-inch slump in the roadway. So this one, luckily, we've already have an engineered design. It's well on its way. We're shooting for city council to approve the design for the Monarch Butterfly Grove project in June. And then it'll go on to the California Coastal Commission. So under that larger project, which includes all of the habitat enhancements for the Butterfly Grove, as well as infrastructure replacements, this one is well on its way to being permitted and constructed. But we do need to do a temporary fix there. Okay, I believe last slide here. We also saw a fair amount of coastal bluff erosion during the two storm events and subsequent smaller events this past winter. On the left, this is part of our popular walking trail on the bluff top. And so it's about at this location of roughly a 60-foot drop down to the beach. We have significant failure of the bluff face here. For scale, that's about a 20-foot gap there that eroded. And so the proposed fix here, one, redirect water from the trails that were leading into this failure. So compacted trail, heavy rainfall, that rainfall becomes surface runoff and then moves out towards the bluff. And then in large volume storms, you get these catastrophic failures. So part of the fix is dealing with water before it gets to the bluff, redirecting it back towards the mountains. Not saying that we send it to the mountains, but just shift the trail slope so that it drains back towards the grassland area of Elwood Mesa. And then come into this eroded slope area, basically do some grading to smooth it out, put in erosion control materials, and then plant it with local coastal bluff natives. And then on the right, we have one of the trails that leads down to the beach. This was practically impassable post-storm. And then in this case, we do have another project that's being proposed for this particular location. We'll improve public safety and access down this beach access point. So with that, in closing, just want to remind the commission that we've got several dozen new projects that came out of the two storm events, not just in parks and open space, but our other staff and public works are dealing with roadway issues, slopes, stability issues on Cathedral Oaks. A whole suite of projects dropped literally out of the sky. And so now we're attempting to deal with them as best we can. Life and safety issues are primary. And then for parks and open space, really trying to get all of our parks reopened where we have temporary closures in certain areas so that the public can enjoy the summer season in our parks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Are there any commissioners who have any questions or comments for Mr. Thompson? Seeing none.
I was just going to echo some of the statements he made earlier, but when we first presented some of this information to City Council, I don't think it can be said enough how much work went into responding a lot of those evenings. I mean, talk about conditions where you can't even see more than 5 feet in front of you if there's that much rain. So I know the rest of the city joins me in saying this, but we just wanted to say thank you to Public Works, particularly to George's team as well, in our parks and open space, but also to our streets division that was dealing with the stuff. And largely, you know, knock on wood, thankfully, we didn't see the type of massive impacts that we saw, you know, 5-10 miles away in the city of Santa Barbara and the county. So I think a lot of that has to do with maintenance that was done before the storm and preparation, but also to just incredibly fast response and dedicated response from city staff. So I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you. Thank you for the report. It's all these invisible things that we don't see. You've made some of them visible to us, and the impact of rain and erosion and postponed maintenance is really a salient concept that we in our society don't address until we have to. And it's twice as hard to actually mitigate that. I'm going to move on.
Chair Jenkins, before we move on, we need to ask about public comment.
I was just going to get to it. Ms. Ling, is there any public comment?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to item B1, please use the raise your hand icon at this time and I will call on you. Chair Jenkins, I see no public comment.
Thank you. Moving on to item C, a discussion item. Ms. Plummer will give a presentation on the consideration of a reservation process for recreational amenities in our city parks.
Thank you, Chair Jenkins, members of the commission. I am excited to talk to you tonight about something that I think may be long overdue in Goleta. We really need to talk about the consideration of a reservation process for some of our recreation amenities in our city parks outside of our group picnic shelter rentals. As you know, there are 16 parks with a wide array of recreation amenities to include, not limited to our playgrounds, our picnic shelters, our athletic fields, disc golf course, tennis courts, pickleball courts, and more. The only spaces we do reserve are the 4 Stowe Grove Park picnic shelters. As you recall, we had 3, the large group picnic areas, and then right before COVID hit, the commission supported opening a 4th one at Stowe Grove Park right next to the playground for the families that are needing to not be out there right at 8 a.m. and wait until 2 p.m. to hold their child's picnic party spot. So we're actually launching that, I believe, on June 1st. We're getting that site already. We didn't want to open it during COVID and encourage the gathering. So we've been doing some improvements out there, and we'll be opening and launching that on June 1st. So there's the 4 at Stowe Grove Park. And then we have the 2 at Johnny Wallace Park that we also reserve. And right now, that's all we reserve. However, when the city assumed the management of the Goleta Community Center, that included the field behind there that we renovated back in 2019. Under the management of the Goleta Valley Community Center, they could rent the space, and it is heavily used as a rental facility. There's obviously, we have priority access to the Boys and Girls Club for their uses, priority access as well for senior programs through the community center, then through the community center organization, and then available opportunities in the evenings and on the weekends. So we, as managing that facility in the status quo direction we received from city council, we too are continuing to rent that space and that field. But I also wanted to share with you that multiple times a year, and as the summer draws near, probably starting in February, I've been getting a call at least once a week asking how people can come to our parks and rent tennis courts or pickleball courts, a field to hold a workshop or a clinic or a tournament or something that we cannot offer for our community members. As you may recall, we do not do direct recreation programming. So any recreation programming that is offered to our residents has to be offered by an outside source. The way our city structure is currently, the only space that we could rent for anything on turf would be at the community center based on this unique current situation, but that is an interim situation at this time. And then the only other spaces we could rent are our picnic shelters. So I just wanted to share that with you. We did bring this item before the commission back in 2019, right before Johnny Wallace Park opened up and before we were able to renovate the field at the community center. And at that time, the commission was had chosen not to move forward, kind of wanted to see how the access and use is at Johnny Wallace Park as well as some of our other parks. And so they decided to kind of table the concept for a while. But as we've come out of COVID and activity is strong in our parks, there is a strong need for people to want to reserve a space, whether it's for a team that wants to have practice, a mom's club that wants to get together and have a picnic with a group, a professional that wants to come in and provide lessons. As you noted on the second page of your staff report, the Goleta Municipal Code has the opportunity for somebody to come in and conduct or deliver lessons or services, but they have to go through a concession agreement, and that process is a tedious process. So if, for example, one of you had a talent that you wanted to come teach to kids during the summertime or during spring break, to go through that process would be extremely tedious. Being able to rent the space and conduct the business is different and is a little bit easier. So it makes it easier for us to do business to be able to provide that service to our residents. So providing the ability to reserve city recreation facilities creates an opportunity not only for youth sports organizations, which is the one thing we always go to, but to also utilize these spaces for practices, games, but for the community at large, the availability of newer, recently renovated facilities creates opportunities for other activities to include classes, clinics, commercial recreation, tai chi, yoga, all types of different opportunities. And that's all based on customer demand. As the commission evaluates the use for athletic fields or some other sports spaces or other spaces, it's just really important that we understand that staff does not have a desire to compete with programs or services currently offered at a park. An example and something when we talk about sports in some of our parks, the first thing somebody thinks of is, we don't want to turn into Gersh Park. Gersh Park is a fabulous facility, and they are the home of a lot of our youth sports programs, and we're not trying to pull from that. But we have a lot of kids that do participate in youth sports programs that go to Gersh Park for their games. But if they could practice at a local park, it might make it a little easier on our families and the coaches who volunteer their time as well. So that's kind of what we're looking for. We're not looking at at big scale games, might be a pickup game or something like that, but not looking at large competitions or anything of that nature. In addition, the intention behind it is that we have a system for field use primarily located at our larger fields, at the Community Center Field, the Johnny Wallace Field, Stowe Grove Park, and Evergreen Park, although those are not as highly desirable because we haven't been able to take the fields back from the Gophers yet, but George's team is working hard on that. But we're anticipating that in the future. So again, we're not looking at the neighborhood parks or reserving a space, for example, at some of the neighborhood parks we just put playgrounds in, Berkeley Park or Animar Park. We do know people go there. We do know people gather there. And it would be nice to have some official information from some of those users. But really, when we're looking at these spaces, we're looking at three real primary reasons. The first is rentals, to ensure that the space is available for practices, for gatherings, for opportunities. An example listed in your staff report of the use of the field behind the community center is La Patera PTA held their end of the year party there last year, and it was packed, and it was wonderful to see all those families. As you know, La Patera school serves a lot of the kids in Old Town, so it was great to not make our kids in Old Town travel to La Patera school to hold the event, and they're trying to do some alternating services such as that. And again, we also see there's a United States Youth Volleyball League that is a grass volleyball league. And it's really a great program, to be honest. It's a little box program that all the coaches or parents and the kids all practice on the same day at the same time. And then they meet up on Saturdays for games, the same place, the same time, no matter what age group you are. So they come in and they take up a space, but it's not a space that's getting used by this particular activity 7 days a week. It's one day for practices and then one day for their version of a game. So looking at having those opportunities, and we don't offer grass volleyball programs here, so it's great that that program can come into our community and offer that service. One of the other reasons is rentals for events and programs, and especially as I mentioned, as summer approaches, we're getting lots of calls, people wanting to host programs, clinics, workshops, tournaments, events for our residents. City of Goleta does not coordinate any direct programming. I want to share that again. This includes if we were to allow somebody to offer a private lesson. We know that private lessons are occurring in our spaces. We know they occur on our tennis courts, our pickleball courts, our soccer fields, and in the skate park. But we want to be able to allow that opportunity to happen. And we want to be able to see if we can partner with some of these people in some cases to be able to help them reach some of the children less served, or be able to grant access in an environment that is easier to be accessible to some of our residents. And then the last thing, as I mentioned, was that if we know that we're having a group like United States Youth Volleyball League, for example, in our parks, then we're able to secure their insurance and we're able to know who's in our park. So the next day when staff comes in, if there's some damages, we know who to go back to. So it really helps us. It also helps us provide numbers in our parks. So when we're going after grants right now, where there is no scientific approach to how many people are using our parks, this is one tool. It won't solve the problem, but it is one tool that would help us. So tonight, staff is looking for consideration from the commission that you'd like us to move forward to continue to explore what a rental program would look like and how we can facilitate that, and looking at creating that opportunity for us to take that opportunity to forward to council for consideration. So that's all I have for you. I'm available if you have any questions.
I was just going to add that another added benefit for these types of approaches is that as additional revenues can be collected for these opportunities, they can be reinvested right back into these parks to help alleviate budget woes. You know, things get expensive more and more every year. It's just a nice way to kind of have it come full circle back into preserving and enhancing these opportunities for the public. So that's just as another benefit. Some might see it as a con, right? It's not being charged for right now, but there are trade-offs with having that security knowing that you can actually plan on using a field or an amenity that is oftentimes worth it to individuals and groups.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. It is in the staff report, but I forgot to mention that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that report. It's interesting to wrestle with reservations versus the general public access to our parks, and the revenue piece makes a big difference, as well as being able to provide programs for actually the broader community, and also training for specific needs that are out there. As far as the commission goes, we have two people who would like to speak, three, and we'll start from the top, Commissioner Diana.
I don't know if I can actually speak to this, because over the past holidays, I was reviewing some proposals I'd made back in 2017, and I actually met with Ms. Plummer, but I didn't really know you then, about this type of thing. I had proposed pirouettes in the park, and there was no reservation. There was no reservation program, so it just petered out. So I actually have a vested interest, so I'm thinking I shouldn't say anything else. Is it a conflict of interest?
I don't think it's a conflict if you're talking about generally for all of our parks throughout the city as a concept. If it was one where you were, we're talking about one specific park with one specific idea that you were already in, I think that'd be a different story. But globally, for all the parks, as an opportunity, I think you're fine.
Okay. Good to know, because from that experience, I think having that reservation opportunity, because this would have been a weekly little open-air class, and again, in the park, as opposed to a formal studio that some children just don't have the opportunity. And as an early childhood educator, I know how important it is for children to be outside in fresh air. And this was, again, 2017, before COVID. So now we all know. thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Commissioner Furia?
Yeah, thank you. I love this proposal. I think it's a great idea. I think also things like cleaning up the park after will be easier if you know who's there or know who to respond to. My one question is kind of referencing what Chair Jenkins mentioned, which is balancing the reservations versus having the space open. Would there be a way to limit so that there is some guaranteed time where it is just open? And I know it's right now just the main fields and stuff, but I wonder, is there any opportunity where it's like you can reserve it most of the time, but there's at least one time set aside for open use or something along those lines? Would that be a possibility?
Commissioner Furia and members of the commission, that's a great question. And the reason we're asking the commission tonight for conceptually, do we move forward? Do you like this idea consideration? Because we need to work through those things. We definitely want to see a consumer balance have space available for a couple different reasons. One reason is so our residents still have access to all the amenities that we've worked so hard to bring them. The other reason is that if we are continually impacting, for example, a field space, and we're not allowing that field to rest, then Mr. Thompson and his team can't do their job. So there's opportunities, for example, let's say the Commissioner Furia's a field hockey team wanted to practice every day at this location. We might mix you up to different areas of town so that those neighbors aren't impacted the whole time and just work with you. We want to be able to, again, provide the service for our residents while also providing access for our residents and not tearing up our fields in a way that nobody can enjoy them.
Excellent. That's very thoughtful, and that sounds great.
Thank you. Commissioner, I'm having a hard time pronouncing your name.
Philibosian.
Philibosian.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Of course, no worries. I think we're definitely in a facility kind of poor community. There's not a lot of space, a lot of parks and area for recreation and programs. So I think offering any way to get more deliberate, intentional, active recreation programs is a fantastic idea. Especially coming out of COVID, we found finding spaces much more difficult because a lot more groups are reaching out for them. So any way we can open up more areas for them, I encourage that. I like that it generates revenue, and I don't think it'll take away or pull from GERSH. I think it's only going to add to it, anything we add to this program. And also, if we don't allow for reservations here, we're just going to push those programs to other communities. And so that means our local people will have to travel to the areas that will allow reservations. So as someone who does do a lot of facility reservations, you know, we have a lot of our programs in Santa Barbara. So, you know, looking at those facilities, so, you know, there wasn't anything here. So I gladly support that and would love to see, you know, deliberate and reservation system online.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any other comments from commissioners?
Chair Jenkins, I would, the last comment from Commissioner Philibosian was that he'd like to see that online. I did want to share with the commission that we are getting ready to recruit for an online reservation process at minimum for our picnic shelter rentals, and then the availability at the community center as well. So if this concept moves forward, then this would also be included. But we are trying to come up to the
modernize,
get away from the Excel spreadsheet and come forward with technology. So that is in the works outside of this project, but this project will be enhanced by it as well.
Yeah, and COVID exposed our lack of hard currency availability with change. So most people do pay things with a card or some sort of digital payment, PayPal, that kind of thing. So I've noticed that when I've paid for cash for things, they just go, we don't have any change to give you. So
yeah,
can you pay with a card? So all those things. And I think more so from the standpoint of, again, it creates data for the city in terms of reporting back to council, you know, how many did we have, you know, for how many specific areas of town, what did it create in terms of revenue? But more so just like Ms. Plummer said, we don't have a lot of that info, and there's no way to know it. We can ask people, but then they can tell us one thing and do another. This way we actually have at least some hard data. The other part I think that's a really nice benefit for these programs or for this type of program is when you decide to rent or lease something and you have to put your name down, you tend to be very, very careful about how you use that property. Not so much also the cleanup after, but during. So I think it creates a better incentive for people to use property when they know that they're more responsible for it as opposed to just showing up and using a pickup game.
Okay. Any other comments from the commissioners? Ms. Ling, would you see if there are any public comments on this particular issue?
Yes, Chair. If there are any members of the public that would like to speak to this item C1, please use the raise your hand icon at this time and I will call on you. Chair Jenkins, there is a Mike Taylor that would like to speak.
Okay. Could you make that person aware of the time limitation?
Yes. Mr. Taylor, you will have 3 minutes to speak. Mr. Taylor, if you could unmute yourself at this time.
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
We sure can.
All right. Can you see me?
No.
No? Okay. Well, thank you, Parks and Rec Commission, for your time and your consideration today. My name is Mike Taylor. I'm a 56-year-old skateboarder and professional skateboarder and professional snowboarder. I'm a native here to Goleta. I work at Skate One Corporation here in Goleta. I've been working there since 1979. My whole life has been involved with skateboarding and action sports. I've worked on over 300 skateboard parks, including the Goleta Skateboard Park, Santa Barbara Park, Solvang, the Carpinteria Park, which is getting built right now, and skate parks in other countries and in 17 states across the U.S. I've also worked on a number of skateboard contests and events, and I'm here proposing to do a skateboard contest at the Goleta Skate Park. I spoke with Joanne last week about it and a little this week, and she suggested that I come to speak at this meeting because we understand that you guys are considering developing a format for taking reservations for just this kind of thing. The contest that I'm looking to do would be really small and regional and for the kids. An example of this kind of contest, there was just one in Los Osos last Saturday, and there's another one coming up in San Luis Obispo this Saturday, May 13th. They're very good examples of what I'm trying to develop here. I want to do a series for Santa Barbara County that includes all the skateboard parks, Solvang, Santa Barbara, Carpinteria, and my skateboard park called the Orchid, like the flower. I've been operating a skate park for 11 years. We do contests, we do demonstrations, we do lessons, we work with at-risk and low-income youth, and we gift them skateboard opportunities. We try to make things affordable, and that's how I'd like to see the contest run if we were to do it in Goleta, so it'd be accessible for all skaters at all ages, all abilities, and definitely include female youth in that as well. I know you guys don't have a process right now, but I'd love to have the opportunity to do an event this summer and work with you to help you develop that process. The last thing I want to say is beyond the contest, we could do so many things. I heard someone mention that there's already lessons going on in your parks that are kind of not above the table. Well, I'd love to do lessons and bring them into the light at the Goleta Skate Park and just be able to provide clinics and lesson opportunities. Happy to
your time is.
I sure do appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. To summarize where we are, it seems like all the commissioners are in accord with asking Ms. Plummer to develop a reservation system to come back to the commission at some future date, and I don't know what's feasible in terms of a date.
Chair Jenkins, staff is actually asking for us to move forward with this, consideration of us moving forward with this. The commission would receive updates in the regular reports that are on your consent calendar. And then if you would like to see anything that goes before council, that would be our next step as council sets all of our fees, is if we were to develop a program. And anytime we start a new program, we will start it. If it's not working out, we have to massage it and switch it up. We can definitely massage it and switch it up. And so what staff's intention is with commission support, so if you have a motion and a second to support the consideration of a reservation program for our parks and recreation amenities, then we will move forward, develop it, and share updates with the commission. But there was not a plan to bring it back to the commission, just so that we can
move forward with council. Council has a very limited schedule for meetings this summer, and we just are looking to move forward if that's your desire.
That way we can include a recommendation from the Parks and Recreation Commission in our staff report to council. The first question they'll ask would be, did you ask the Parks and Rec Commission? So we'd like to be able to say yes, and that they were in support of this idea. The reason we wouldn't necessarily come back to you for, you know, evaluating the whole program is we also have to see what the response will be from council in terms of kind of what Commissioner Furia mentioned earlier about, you know, leaving some open times and allowable times for the rest of the public to use it without reservations. So the biggest kind of limiting factor is that by policy, the council determines fees for the city. And so we'd have to do a lot of work with them to get some sort of direction on that. So as Ms. Plummer said, we could come back to you with updates here and there, but the majority of the work would be with the city council because it's a financial issue.
Okay, thank you. So we'll entertain a motion.
Chair Jenkins, is your microphone on?
Yes. Commissioner Furia?
Yeah, I would like to motion that the Parks and Rec Department, Goleta Parks and Rec Department, move forward with creating a reservation process for specific recreation amenities in the city parks.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Is there any discussion? Seeing that there's none, I think I messed up here because we didn't ask the public. Oh, we did. Yeah, I forgot that. So we're ready to vote. So, Ms. Ling, could you do a roll call?
Yes, Chair. Commissioner Hu?
Yes.
Commissioner Rapolgul?
Aye.
Commissioner Filibosian?
Yes.
Commissioner Furia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Walton?
Yes.
Chair Jenkins?
Yes. Okay, thank you. We're moving on to item D, Commissioner comments. Anything that you would like to air regarding the meeting process or anything you'd like to staff to look into, now's the opportunity to speak up. Seeing that there's no comments, the chair entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn for the evening.
Second?
I'll second that.
Okay. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Oh, there is, oh, I forgot the dates. That there is a training June 1st for the Brown Act.
Yeah, so all the commissioners should have received information from the city clerk's office regarding the Brown Act. The commission's been asking for some training for quite some time, and I got one response right away from a commissioner saying, we have to do this.
Okay. I'm going to that meeting.